I like your word exhortation. Receive exhortation. That's really the right word for it, and it's properly used. And the reason why I like it is usually that word is incorrectly used. But I like that word, exhortation. Here's the thing about exhortation. We are called to this. This is one of the things that is supposed to take place in a ministry, exhortation. And we are said to have a ministry of exhortation sometimes. All too often, believers think that's a ministry of correction, pointing out negatives, and things like that. And we've all seen things like that in various places. I like what you said. It was very edifying. We were very edified. He had exhortation, and we were very edified. He said, this is the heart of it. Go out and preach the God. Go out and win the lost. Go out and reveal Christ. And this is the heart of it. And we were edified. And that is correct exhortation. What we want to be careful with is, like Daniel was saying, is to be those good stewards. In a ministry, or in a family, or in a company, or any kind of a place where you have interaction among individuals, really. You want to make sure that you have that good stewardship of grace. That lacks all too often. What is my interaction with people? Is it one where if I come to you, I say, I'm going to be edified? Or maybe I come to you and you say, okay, what is it now? What is my ministry with people? We need to have our ministry always be one of edification, where we build up the body, build up the saints. Christianity is filled with people who are willing to tell you everything that is wrong. This is our condition as human beings, having an old sin nature. We have this tendency to go with, this is what is wrong. A good practice. Take this to heart. Do not say to someone, this is what is wrong, unless you have said 100 times, this is what is right. This is what is good. This is what is appreciated. Do you know why? Until that point, no one has the right to comment on anything. Pastor Stevens once said, and he was talking about people visiting our ministry. We had a guy one time who was an evangelist of some kind. I don't really know anything about him. But one of the pastors brought him and asked Pastor Stevens if maybe he could share. And so Pastor Stevens gave him time in a wrap. And the guy started criticizing the body because they didn't want to go along with what he was trying to do. He wanted to get him to start singing some song. And people were tired. At that point, it's approaching 10 o'clock at night. Most of them have worked a full day. A lot of them got up early in the morning, maybe 4, 5, 6 o'clock. And they've worked this whole day, and now they are late into the night. And they're not in need of criticism because they don't want to go along with somebody's program. And so he started criticizing them. And Pastor Stevens got up, took the microphone out of his hand, and blasted the guy. Because that's not how you approach things. But he said this, and it always stuck with me. You never get into somebody's pulpit with anything other than edification. You never go into somebody's pulpit with anything other than edification. And we have to remember that this is really the relationship, one, that pastors have to the body, yes, absolutely, but also that we have toward one another. Right? Paul said, be ministers, for example, of reconciliation, not of division. Of edification, not of criticisms. Pastor made this point of it, and he also said this. I don't remember the number, but I think this is a good number because of the percentages involved. 100 times edify. 100 times say, this is what is right. This is what is good. This is what I love about you. Before you say one word of criticism, you may feel justified in your criticism. It doesn't matter if you're justified. Do you think that if God marked iniquity, you would stand? I know I wouldn't. No one can stand in the face of criticism. What is the criticism that God could make if He so chose? God, who knows your intimate thoughts, God, who knows your heart, God, who knows your secret times when no one is around, but He sees you very clearly. God, who is there, what is the criticism that God could make? Sometimes God will correct us. Sometimes we get corrected from the pulpit. But sometimes you see people that will come and they will criticize. You're not doing this right. You're not doing it like that. I think you should be more like this. All right, you know what? Let's make a deal. Let's edify. I'll edify you, you edify me. Let's make this deal. This should be our heart toward one another, like it was between Jonathan and David, when they said, God will be between you and me and between your children and my children. God will be between us. You know what that meant? That God will be between your children and my children? It meant this, that I will teach my children to love you, and you will teach your children to love me. And now God is between our children. You see, this is the way God had established it. Don't say a negative word until you have said 100 edifying things. If you find yourself in a situation where you feel that somebody has offended you in Matthew 18:15, you do have the right to go to them alone. If they don't hear you, then you have the right to bring with you to that individual 2 or 3 witnesses. Okay, if they don't hear you still, what do you do with it? Then you have no option but to let God deal with it. But sometimes people feel compelled. If you have an issue with someone, the Bible gives you that right. You know what? When I have an issue with people, and sometimes I do, sometimes I have an issue with people. I mean, honestly, I do. Sometimes I know that things happen and they are wounding to me, and the person won't come to me and say them to me. They'll say them behind my back. And that's happened on a number of occasions to every pastor I know. You know what I do? I say nothing. Even though I know it happens, I say nothing. I would sooner let someone stand or fall before God than to try to correct something that I was not present for. Do you know why? I don't know what's in that person's heart. I know that if it's something, for example, that's negative or critical, that it's not right. I don't care if they think they have the facts, it's not right. James 4:11 tells us this, that when we judge another believer, we judge God, because we judge His Word. But I will tell you this much, that I don't say things to people. And this is why. I'd rather be one who edifies than one who corrects, than one who criticizes, than one who brings negativity. I don't know what is in that person's life. I don't know what will damage somebody's capacity. I don't know what will damage their ability to walk with God. I may feel justified in the negativity that I possess sometimes. I knew a man like that once, years ago. in Baltimore, he felt very justified in his negativity. Even when you get people like that, it's still just carnality, and you don't respond in kind. When somebody does something that I don't like, I say nothing. Because in Romans 14:4, they will stand or fall before God. And the funny thing is, God will make them stand. So even if they are criticizing me, or negative toward me, or hurtful toward me, God will still make them stand. Because they belong to God. And that tells me that the issue that they have is best resolved by God. I don't have God's wisdom, I don't have God's understanding, and I don't have God's knowledge. But the issue that they have is best resolved by God. Now there is a table of organization and we understand that. I love people like Pastor Schaller or Pastor Shibeli, Pastor Hadley, Pastor Cannon. These different men. They're great men. Do you know why? Do you know what makes them great? They are stewards of grace. They are stewards of grace. It's interesting, if you talk to these people, Pastor Schaller, for example, you see and feel and sense a deep presence of God with him if you have the sensitivity to discern it. Then you can say hello to this man and you can feel the presence of God. Have you sensed that from him? I know I have. I'm a little bit in awe sometimes. Still, I've known the man for about 26 years. I'm still a little bit in awe of that. Maybe more than that. But you know, it's the way we are to be. Do you know where it comes from? Stewardship. It comes from stewardship. Stewardship to grace. Stewardship to loving kind, to loving the body. You know, he has never, that I know of, I have never seen him do this, repeated or received a negative report. If somebody says to him, let me tell you what happened, he says, I don't want to know. I've known him for a long time and I've seen him do that on a number of occasions. I don't want to know your negative report. But Pastor, I don't want to know your negative report. Stewards of integrity. Us people here that I know, if you went to them with something negative, they would say, I don't want to hear your negative report. Stewards of integrity. Stewards of honor. Stewards of grace. We edify. That's what we do. Pastor Stevens was a master at this. He would see somebody in a fault. What do you think he did? I'll tell you what he didn't do. He didn't come up to them and say, this is your fault. This is your mistake. You need to get this right. Do you know why? Because even if he had the facts, he would have stood in accusation. He wasn't going to go down that path. Even if he had the facts, he would have stood in accusation. I recently read a passage from him. It was a great statement. He said, if you have every fact that there is to have about a situation. Let's say you have all of them, even the things that people think in their heart, and somehow you manage to know that, you still have none of the real facts. The facts are according to God's thoughts and understanding. And seeing is how His ways are above our ways and His thoughts are above our thoughts. He's the only one who actually has the facts. What do? We are stewards of edification, of grace, of mercy, of forgiveness, of love, of loving kindness. stewards of the heart of God. And it is expressed in edification. If you come to me with something that you maybe feel is legitimate in the table of organization, you say, this person, pastor, has done thus and such. If you say, this person has done, I will tell you, stop. I don't want to hear the rest. Stop. My wife is the same way. If I was to go to my wife and say, this person has done such and such, when I got to this person has done, she'd say, stop. I don't want to hear the rest. I don't want negativity in my life. Why would I want negativity in my life? Hey, let me ask you something. Close relationships. How free are you to be negative in your close relationships? If you are free to be negative in your close relationships, I'll tell you right now, your close relationships are not of God. And I don't care if it's your husband or your wife. If you are free to just criticize or slander people in your close relationships and say, that's my wife, that's my husband, that's my best friend, that's my kid, that's Bob over there, and Bob I've known forever. I used to know a guy named Bob.
He talked like this. I used to be able to imitate him really good. I used to have this song, let me tell you about my Jesus, he's my best friend I ever knew. The kids loved him.
He had the most unique voice. He was really good friends with this other guy named Buddy. And I went up to Buddy one time. This was years ago. I went up to Buddy one time. And Buddy didn't turn around.
I said, hey, Buddy, how you doing?
He said, hi, Bob. And I had a whole conversation with him like that. Bob was a wonderful guy. I love Bob. Don't get me wrong. But he had the most unique voice. And I had a blast imitating that voice. And then Buddy turns around, he's shocked that he's talking to me. Anyway, let's edify. Let's keep things on a very edifying level within our relationships. Let's edify. But you don't know what's going on. Oh, it doesn't really matter. God knows what's going on. And by the way, I may not know what's going on, but you know what? Either do you. We don't know what's going on. We have impressions, but we don't know what's going on. Brian, I love Brian. Brian's my friend. Daniel here. Daniel's awesome. All of you guys, Joe and Luis and all of you guys, my friends. How do I know what is really going on in your lives? Do I really have any idea at all? Of course not. Let's say it's a wife or a husband. Do you really know what is going on in the life of your husband or your wife? Well, yeah, I spend all day long with them. I see them all the time. Yeah, but do you know the depths of their heart? Do you know those things? Do you know the depths of their heart? I've been married for almost 30 years, and although I say I know my wife extremely well, and she knows me extremely well, sometimes there's days when I come and I see that it's not quite the same, or she'll look at me. Actually, that happens more frequently, I think. She looks at me and it's not quite the same. Like, something, what's going on? Are you okay? Are you having a good day? Are you okay? See, those are times even in our closest relationships, we don't really know what's going on. We trust people to love. We trust people to be edifying. But what if they're not? Then you get your edification from God, perhaps, or from another portion of the body. But you never become negative. You don't want to go down that route. Let's edify. In families, half of you here are single, so take this as teaching for the future. But in families, It's like it says, husbands, love your wives. And then it says, wives, honor your husbands. It says in Proverbs that younger women are to be taught to love their husbands by older women. So, in families, there has to be a love relationship. It goes for both sides. The husband needs to love his wife. The wife needs to love her husband. Did you know that has very little to do with their emotional state? Certainly there will be a filial that responds to agape. But the love that Ephesians 6 is talking about there is not a love of filial love. It's a love of agape love. And so what we see is this, that in a family, in a husband and wife situation, edify. Husbands must never be critical of their wives. They must never say to her, you did this wrong and you're like this and I wish you were more this way and boy, do you ever get it right and these are your mistakes. Some guys do that. If it's a Christian who is doing that, then he has a problem with God. Because God said, love her as Christ loved the church. So you may have a guy who perhaps is, I don't know, tired or maybe angry. For some reason in this culture, we have angry people. He's angry. Does he edify his wife? Does he build her up? Does he say, you know, I appreciate what you're doing? Does he tell her that he loves her? I think sometimes guys are a little bit egotistical. And their ego refuses to build up their wife. Or maybe they say, well, if I build her up too much, she will something. Well, I say to that guy, you're an idiot. Because you love your wife because she is your body. She is your body. She is your body. Just as we are Christ's body, she is your body. And so love her. Don't curse your own body. Love her. On the other hand, you have wives who treat their husbands with disrespect. Wives who are sarcastic or critical of their husbands and they don't edify. Do you realize, lady, what you're doing? That he is your head? It's like slapping yourself upside the head several times a day. Why don't you just take a 2x4 and beat yourself? For a wife who does not edify her husband. How often does a wife say to him, you know, I appreciate the kind of head you are. And she may think, well, he's not really that kind of head. Then say it in faith and build his capacity. They say, my husband is not the type of husband that he ought to be. Are you the type of wife that you ought to be? Ask yourself that first. See, it works both ways. But here's the thing. Women have to remember this. The order that is given in the Bible is important. And it says, wives, submit to your husbands, and then husbands, love your wives. Why is the wife told by God to submit to her husband first? Submitting doesn't mean I'm going to do it as long as I feel like that's what I want to do. Sometimes you get that. That's not submission, lady. It's the husband assuming that he is a godly, spirit-filled man, not a perfect man. No man is perfect. But a godly and spirit-filled man says, honey, I feel we should do this. And so long as she's agreeing, she said, I submit. And then when she doesn't agree, Now she has the right to tell him, you know, I really think we maybe perhaps this would be a better way. She has that right. She doesn't have the right to say, forget it, I'm not doing that. Because in that case she's uncovered and Satan's going to enter into that family. But as long as he is a godly man, and she does have the right to say to him with honor and respect and courtesy, I think sometimes in families courtesy is abandoned, politeness is abandoned. You see it all the time. You go somewhere, let's say in the store, and they're chewing each other out. We had it happen the other day on Outreach. You knock on the door. Get the door! It's your blanking turn! Wow, there's a lot of courtesy and love in that family. I wonder how long they'll last. And then they come to the door and tell you how religious they are. That was priceless. Well, that stuff is worth something. Those are the things that make your relationships. That stuff is worth something. But when that husband says, honey, I really think, you know, I've prayed, I really think, she has the right to say, have you prayed about this? But if he is a godly, spirit-filled man, he says, I've prayed about this and I really think that this is the way to go. Okay, then that's what you go with. Now, he does not have the right to say to her, honey, tonight we're going to the bar. If he says that to her, she says, bye, have a whatever time. But I'm going to be here, and when you get back, then we can have dinner or whatever. She doesn't follow him into carnality. By the way, nor does the husband follow the wife into carnality. And that happens fairly often. That husbands follow wives into carnality. Here's the thing, guys. Edify. Don't say a critical word to anyone, including your husband or your wife, unless you have said 100 edifying statements. And if you feel like you have reason to be negative, just keep your mouth shut and take it to God. Because no matter what your reason is, you may even have a fact, but you'll be lacking truth. And God is not interested about our facts. God is interested in the truth. Sanctify them according to your word. Your word is truth. John 17:17. Jesus was the truth. So we edify. We edify. This is how families are built. This is how relationships are built. This is how marriages are built. This is how companies are built. Churches are built. I know some people who are the heads of companies who are very edifying. And those people have a very content workforce. And they will find ways to edify their employees. And if their employee makes a mistake, they don't come to that employee in criticism or negativity. They come to that employee in a spirit of reconciliation. What is that? Hey, Bob, you're a great guy, you're a great employee, I know you're working really hard. And I appreciate all that you do. But I was wondering if you could do something for me. What? You're the boss. You have the right to say, you do this. No, you're the boss. No. Not if you have any brains at all. You say to them, can you do something for me? And let's say they're making a mistake making widgets. I don't even know what a widget is. But let's say the widget has a hole in it and they make the hole too big. Can you do me a favor? I really need to start making widgets of this size. And here, just in case you're not sure, do you know how to do that? Let me make sure you know how to do that. Even bosses edify if they are successful. The most successful people are the ones who are edifiers. The most successful relationships are the ones that are built on edification, the stewardship of grace. We edify. Yes, sometimes if you have a family and your kid is acting up, sometimes you have to deal with the kid. But you still deal with them in grace, even if you have to somehow discipline the child. This is not to say that in a family we don't discipline children. This is not to say that we lose the table of organization. This is to say that we apply it correctly. Apply discipline in a family correctly. If you're in a table of organization, doesn't matter what it is, apply it correctly. Always apply it correctly. You go and you edify. Even if you have to correct people, you edify them. You don't say you're doing this wrong, you're like this, you're making these mistakes. That's not edifying. That makes that person want to be nowhere near you. To say, hey, I love the way you're doing things. I love who you are. I love everything about you. And you know what you do? Just what Jesus did. I love that story about that woman, Mary, who washed Jesus' feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. And I love Jesus' confession about her. Jesus said that she sinned much and she loves much. She that sinned much loves much. Well, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? She made lots of mistakes and now she loves, because her mistakes were dealt with forgiveness and compassion by the Savior. Do you think that woman was ever critical toward Christ? Even after He was crucified, even after He was ascended? Do you think there was a negative moment in her life toward Christ? We don't know, but you know what? I'll bet you anything she was never negative toward Christ. Because she loved much. Simon the Pharisee, he wouldn't even give him a basin of water for his feet, which was simple, common courtesy. And he wouldn't even do that much. But you know what I thought was interesting about Simon the Pharisee? He pointed his finger at the woman, and Jesus pointed His love at her. Simon directed his attention to her faults. Jesus directed His love toward her faults. Wow, what a difference that made, the love of God. What a difference that made. What a difference it makes when people edify. What a difference that makes when we are stewards of the heart of God. We don't say to ourselves, I have a right. The person who says to themselves, I have a right, loses their life. Isn't that what the Bible teaches? I have a right. You lost your life. Lay down your rights. Lay down your rights. We're very big on rights in our society. Lay down your... I have the right. You have nothing. I have no rights, and neither do you. If I am dead and crucified with Christ, what rights are there for a dead man? Show me the laws that protect the dead. You can't desecrate their grave. Oh yeah, that's true. You cannot desecrate their memory. You cannot desecrate their memory. But show me the laws that protect the dead. Well, in some places that I'm aware of, the dead have the right to vote, apparently, because it's happened. But I'm not sure that's legal. But show me what rights you have. Do we have the right to do anything but edify? You know, here's the thing. Christ died for all of us. That means we were all in need of His death. Have you ever been, or have I ever been, not in need of the death of Christ? First thing you do when you get out in birth, you start crying. Right away you need the death of Christ. Have I ever been apart from the need for the death of Christ? Have you? Have I ever been in a place where I knew all things? Have I ever been in the place where I could read people's hearts? Have I ever been in a place where I knew people's genetics? Have I ever been in the place where I knew the intimate details of the thoughts of their heart? I don't know that about anybody. Have I ever been in a place where I was there for their longings before God and for their sorrows before Him? Have I ever been in a place where I bottled tears? Have I ever been in a place where I see what things do to somebody's frame of reference, to somebody's heart? Have I ever been in that place? All I can do is edify. All I can do is edify. Maybe I don't like what somebody says. Maybe I see somebody and they're rough in my estimation. What do I do with that person? I leave them be before God, or I edify them. Maybe you don't like the way things go sometime. Maybe you have a boss at work and you don't like what the boss said to one of your co-employees. You know what I want to say at that time? Were you there for the conversations that the boss had with that employee? Were you there for the exchanges? Were you there for the times when the boss had tried to say to the employee, "This is how it's done right"? Or were you there just when the employee railed against the boss? And you say, perhaps, and hopefully you don't, "Wow, what a terrible boss. That employee told me something." And James chapter 4 says, "Speak not evil one of another. Speak not evil one of another." In the law of contrasts, that tells us edify one another. Edify one another. Keep it edifying. You know what I think is a good practice? Edifying people behind their back. Edify them to their face also. Because people deal with an old sin nature, with a world system, and with the devil. So if you have the ability, edify people to their face also. But then also edify them behind their backs. But it seems to me, let's say in a work environment, that a whole lot more people are negative to people behind their backs than edifying behind their backs. Don't receive it. Somebody wants to say something negative, don't receive it. They're speaking negatively of God's Word, and the Word became flesh. They're speaking negatively of God. Don't receive it. Don't allow it. Don't be cruel. Don't be rude. Say, "I'm sorry, I don't want to hear about that." Don't allow it. Don't receive it. We want to do things with God's heart because that is what we are the stewards of. We have to understand this point. We want to do things with God's heart because that is what we are the stewards of. Hey, if you are a kid with parents, and we don't have any kids here, but we do have parents, and we do have people with parents, edify them. Edify them. You know what shocks me about the modern generation is how rude they are. And they're rude to their parents. And the parents take it like it's normal. That's shocking to me. When I was a kid, if I was rude to my parents, forget it. It was like instant discipline. Not rude to your parents. People are rude, mom and dad. You know why? Because the kid thinks that they're smarter, that they know better than mom or dad. And so they get a little bit arrogant and they are rude to mom and dad. Have regard for them. I don't care if you're an adult, have regard for them. But they're not saved, or they're not what they ought to be, and they're not like this, and they're not the way I want them, and they don't understand. And maybe even all of that is true. But none of that is an issue. It's only an issue if I want to be on a horizontal, natural level. It's like Pastor Schaller says, if I want to live on the first floor, but if I would like to live on the second floor, I need to approach things with God's heart. And so we approach things with God's heart. We edify. We can see people's lives if we're close to them. The good and the bad. We can see people's lives if we're close to them. Do you know why God has allowed that? So that we would be stewards of His grace in their lives. That is why God has allowed that. So we would be expressions of His loving kindness in their lives. So that we would be stewards of mercy in their lives. And even if I have a kid that I have to discipline, once the discipline is over, it's over. And I don't drag out the attitude of the discipline through things like grudges or attitudes or funny atmosphere. I don't drag that out. Once the discipline is over, it's over. It's like how God, if God has to discipline us, like He did with David when He sent the plagues, and the angel went to destroy Jerusalem, God said, it's enough. Once the discipline is over, it's over. And you don't carry it out over a long period of time. Let there be an end to it. It needs to be. Or that kid will never believe that they're loved. It needs to be over. We don't remember, well, kid, here's the thing. Have you practiced God's memory with your children, or with your spouse, or with your close friends? Have you practiced God's memory with these people? Where God forgets our sins, Hebrews 8:12, our mistakes, our offenses, our iniquities, they're all forgotten by God. Well, you know, that's not just in the church. That's in all of our relationships. Have you practiced God's memory in all of your relationships? When it's over, it's over. A co-worker comes to you and says, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And it's over? Or is it like, yeah, okay, fine. And then the lingering thought of the mistake continues. When it's over, it's over. Period. Because otherwise, I'm the one in sin if I carry it through. Things like accountability. Do you know what accountability is about? Bringing people to Christ. That's what accountability is about.
We say accountability is about dealing with people's mistakes. Make sure that they never happen with them and maybe they get somehow disciplined for them.
You have no clue. It's not accountability. That's vengeance. God said vengeance belongs to Him. And it never comes on the believer. Now, accountability is about bringing people to God, restoring people's lives. If somebody is in error, in a failure of some sort, not my criticism or not my forcefulness of will. Accountability is about restoring people. It's about somebody perhaps in error going to the proper place, handling it the proper way, first to that person alone, and then to that person twice, and then perhaps to the pastor of the church. And by the way, all three have to take place in order. You don't go to the pastor first before you go to them. And then you don't go to the pastor before you do it twice. Yes, you do have the right to go to the pastor. I'm not saying you don't, you absolutely do. But you do things decently and in order. Now, here's the thing. What is the purpose of it? The purpose of it is to restore them to fellowship with Christ. The purpose is not, I don't like this, or I was offended, or I got hurt, or they said this, or they did this, and I'm really mad about it, and pastor, do something. Pastor with assault like that is going to say to you, I don't want to hear it. No. This is how you do it. You do it with a heart of love. You do it with a heart of love. So you have somebody who does something, perhaps you don't like it or they hurt your feelings or whatever. I don't know, you're offended at them. And you've gone to them alone and they wouldn't hear you. And then you've gone to them with witnesses and they wouldn't hear you. By the way, make sure they're actually doing something wrong. Sometimes people say they're doing something wrong because I think they are. Make sure they're actually doing something wrong. By the way, you don't say, they did something wrong. They got right, yeah, but they did something wrong. At that point, there is no accountability. Repentance has taken place. Now, this is how it works. You do it with a heart to bring people back into fellowship. That's the heart of accountability. You do it with a heart to bring people back into fellowship. As ministers of reconciliation, you do it with a heart to bring people back into fellowship. And when you bring people back into fellowship, then your accountability was successful. Maybe you see somebody and they're living in fornication. And you go to them alone very lovingly, not accusing them of the fornication, but very lovingly trying to restore them. And then if they won't hear you, then go with a couple of witnesses. If you don't have your witnesses, you leave them be before God. God will deal with them. It's one of the things. I think people don't want to do that because they don't trust God to do what He says He'll do. A lot of times, if I want to bring somebody to something, I have to ask myself, do I trust God here? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But it's an important question. So I say, do I trust God here? As I go to them, and I don't get my satisfying answer. And if I can say, yes, I do trust God here, and yes, I am here for the spirit of reconciliation, and yes, I am here because I love that person, then fine. You go to them alone. You go to them with another witness. And you may need to go to the pastor if you don't still, with the witness if they don't still hear you. And that's fine. That's all the divine table of organization. Every believer has the right to that. Jesus gave us that right. However, if the person is restored already, there is no more accountability that's required toward that issue because the accountability was successful. You see that? The accountability was successful. If it was not successful, then at that point it's the pastor's issue. But if it was not successful, unless it's something that is outright hurting the body, the pastor may decide to just love that person and let them grow. Or if it's something that's damaging the body, the pastor may go so far as to remove that person from the fellowship. And that can happen also. But the idea is to restore. always to build, always to edify, always to restore. And when that is taken place, then accountability is done correctly. That happens in every table of organization. It needs to happen that way in every table of organization. Bosses. I think that's the most common example. Bosses. Bosses and their employees. Like we said, some bosses are amazing. And their employees love these people. You know why? Because the boss loves them. That's why. They feel well treated by him. But sometimes, even if the boss doesn't treat them well, maybe the boss has no animosity toward them. But maybe the boss has so much on his plate that he doesn't really have the time to go to everybody's lunch table and sit with them and say, "Buddy, buddy, I love you, pal. I'm glad that you're here." And maybe that's how he feels, but he simply doesn't have the opportunities. Or sometimes the boss is just a jerk. In any case, the employee's response needs to be the same. And if the employee responds well, then the boss sometimes changes also. But here's the thing. If the employee responds well, and the boss has some kind of, perhaps, negativity or animosity, then God will deal with the boss. And the employee doesn't have to worry about it. Notice the ones who do the best are the edifiers. Close on that. I went to a place yesterday. And it's a place nobody likes to work at. I know, because I used to work there years and years ago, like decades ago. Nobody likes to work there. And I saw this one lady, she was working there, and she was just as happy as could be. She was friendly, and she waited on me. She was friendly, and she was happy, and she was sweet. And she was bubbly, and she's like, wow. And I thought to myself, why is this lady working here? Because I know what it's like to work there. Why is this lady working here? But you would never know that it's a place that's not really all that pleasant to work. But she was just as pleasant as could be. Made my day talking to that lady. I talked to her for about 3 minutes. And this is a very sweet, pleasant person. And it's just like, wow, this lady's got it right. I didn't really have much of a conversation with her. There wasn't the opportunity, but I said to myself, well, I'll bet you anything she's a believer. Why? Because she was a steward of something. I don't know if she meant to be or not, but she was. She was a steward. And in her case, she was a steward of a right attitude. In a place that's miserable. She was a steward of a right attitude. And boy, her right attitude made a difference. Let's be edifiers. Let's agree to this. As a body, but also personally toward other people. Let's agree to this. We will be edifiers. We will be edifiers. We will not say one negative thing, even if it's factual, until we have said 100 positive things. We will be edifiers. We will practice kindness toward each other. We will practice kindness toward the people we come across. We will be edifiers. That's not to say that we don't have the right to come to somebody. And it's not to say that we don't have the right to practice the table of organization. And it's not to say that we don't have the right to deal with things. We do have those rights. But we do them in edification. We do them properly. And decently and in order. So that the body, other people, and we ourselves may be edified. Let's make that agreement in our hearts toward everyone. And we won't worry about their responses. We will worry about our own. And we will be edifiers. Amen? Amen.